disagree with me on Kirk Cousins, or if you agree, love to hear your take on Twitter. If you can't get through on the phone lines at 404-726-0929. And then starting next week, I will also be live on YouTube, so you can comment and watch the show as well at C Thomas Radio. Right now, let's switch gears from Kirk Cousins for just a little bit and head out to the WadeFord.com hotline and welcome in our good buddy Caleb Johnson, who had expanded duties last night, got a break from covering the Hawks, and got to witness some college basketball at State Farm Arena. Caleb, first of all, was it a 10-hour day for you, a 12-hour day for you? What were we looking at?
Yeah, man, it was certainly a long day. As it's one of those things that I hadn't warned my wife ahead of time that there were going to be two games. It was just one of those, like, yeah, I'm covering the Sweet 16 and, you know, it starts at 7. And it was like, oh, no. And the second game starts at 10. And I think what really was the sweetener on top of everything is when the second game had a 22-minute halftime. Wow. That started around, like, I think it was 10:24 at night, when it was like, oh, cool. And now we have 22 minutes to sit here. I was very thankful that the Braves were playing, and so I pulled them up on my laptop because I told some friends that were sitting next to me, I was like, I absolutely would have dozed off. Not because the basketball wasn't incredible, because it was some very competitive basketball, but certainly they are far more interested in the TV aspect of these games than they are about the actual local aspect of these things when you're on the East Coast and you're tipping off at 10 o'clock at night. But, yeah, man, I mean, a good couple of games that we got to see. I certainly am not, like, I am not locked in to college basketball, and I will readily admit that to anyone who asks. But whenever the tournament comes around, I do like to watch. However, you know, when you go from covering the NBA on a regular basis and then college comes to town and you're really spending some dedicated time watching it up close, it is certainly an adjustment just because of how the game, it's a very different game that gets played. And, you know, if we're all honest, they're not quite as skilled as the NBA guys are, which can at times be very frustrating and other times creates a lot of excitement and keeps things pretty close. As it certainly did with Michigan State and Ole Miss, but that, I think that second game, that's where you saw the college aspect be very frustrating as a team like Michigan was fighting for things and really in it, and then they just went like 6 minutes and couldn't buy a basket because Auburn put the clamps on. Yeah, really cool scene to see. Also cool to see how, like, Auburn absolutely packed out State Farm Arena. It felt like a home game for the Tigers, which I did not expect coming in, just because I thought, I thought Michigan would travel pretty well, but Auburn certainly was in there, and I would expect they'll be back in full force, you know, on Sunday.
All right. So before we get into the Hawks on the court, Trae Young did something pretty cool this week, huh?
Yeah.
He's the record that he didn't he set a record of some sort?
I'm trying to remember now because it kind of feels like he does things on a regular basis. I know Dyson was the more recent one, at least in my memory, of the 200 steals. But what am I forgetting since a few days ago?
Well, we can do this in real time here because I did send it to Carl and Mike.
Uh-oh.
To talk about. He did. Okay, here we go. Trae Young is now the youngest player in the NBA history to reach 12,000 points and 4,500 assists, passing LeBron James.
Yeah, so you're reminding me that now, because the thing that stood out from that is I was like, this is such a LeBron stat. You know, we have those now where we're like, the young are the first player by the age of 27 to do this and this, and like certainly, you know, cool achievements. I think the one that was maybe more impactful to Trae was him passing John Stockton a couple weeks ago when it came to assists in a season. Like, it's just one of those. He's certainly been on an individual tear stat wise. Of course, it's always funny because, and I do appreciate it from Trey, but whenever you ask Trey about his individual stats, and I've stopped doing it, quite honestly, just because it is the easiest way for Trey to go, the individual accolades, sure, they're great, but I want to win. I want to win, and that's what is most important to me. Now, certainly, you know, what they've been doing the last couple of games, well, not ideal in terms of wanting to win, in terms of wanting to secure the seventh seed and have a home play-in game, all of those sorts of things. But I do think there have been some outliers that have kind of negatively impacted this Hawks team as of late. And certainly that Miami game was just one that if a team is going to shoot that hot from 3-point for three quarters, it doesn't matter how bad your defense is or how good your defense is. I mean, teams shouldn't be able to shoot as well as they did, like Miami did, against the Hawks. And that certainly, like, that was the difference in that game. That's that one got out of hand super quick. So in terms of the overall, like, Trey's been doing some incredible stuff as far as stats go. Nothing that's going to, like, win him an award, I would say. It's certainly more of, you know, what's happening with Zachary Risache and his fight for Rookie of the Year, what's happening with Dyson Daniels and his fight for Defensive Player of the Year, with him being, you know, only one of three players since the year 2000 to have over 200 steals in a season. It's been pretty incredible. And I think it's kind of led us to the point that when we do see Trey have another historic career kind of achievement, it's like, oh yeah, just another day.
All right. So as we move towards the latter stages here, only a couple of games left before the playoffs begin. Let's stay with the realistic scenario that they finish here in the seventh seed. What is their best path forward? What is their best strategy against the most likely teams that they're going to have to face to get themselves into a position where, I mean, Caleb, I'm not saying they're going to win a series, but at least be competitive.
Yeah, I think, so I kind of gone back and forth on this. I mean, as far as finishing out the regular season, it's just beating Orlando. Like, of course, I mean, you can do the whole you have to win every game because, sure, that's the most obvious thing to say, I think, about this team when you've got, 8-10 games to go in the regular season. But the biggest thing is beating Orlando. You've got two opportunities to face them, and they are your direct competition, for taking the seventh seed. And I think you really want a home play-in game because that is going to make things easier. You don't have to travel. You're more familiar, obviously. You got your own fans in the building so that you can win that game and then move on to what you'd be playing Boston. You'd be playing the two seed in that situation. Now, the interesting route would be if you were to get in that 7-8 matchup against Orlando, lose, and then play the winner of the 9-10, which I would expect to be Chicago, just because Chicago's been playing so well as of late. I mean, look at what they beat the Lakers the other night in a walk-off. But winning the 8-9 game, I guess whoever is the winner of the 9-10 and loser of the 7-8 gets to play Cleveland. And, like, if the Hawks found themselves in a position where they're taking on DeAndre Hunter and the Cleveland Cavaliers after having traded him at the deadline, like, the storylines would certainly be there. I think if they take care of business as the seventh seed and go on to face the Boston Celtics, I mean, we just saw them a couple of years ago take Boston to six games. So it's certainly, not outside the realm of possibility. I get that Boston hadn't won a championship at that point, and so certainly you would expect them to not take any series lightly, but I think they do. I think those guys are the type of team that tend to warm up in the playoffs and take things more seriously as they progress along. So, yeah, I think it would be far more interesting to see a Hawks-Cleveland series. But certainly, you know, if it ends up being Hawks-Celtics, we've seen that matchup time and time again. I wouldn't expect the Hawks to win that series. But then again, I mean, Chris, the fact that we're in a position where we're talking about the Hawks not just being a throw-in play-in team that might advance, but we're certainly expecting them to make the playoffs. We were coming into this season not knowing if they were a play-in team, and they are going to end up winning more games this year than they did last year, and they didn't have Jalen Johnson this year, and they traded away technically, you know, and DeJounte Murray, who was looked at as their second best player in the offseason. So certainly how things have come over the course of this season, have there been, you know, have they taken their lumps along the way and disappointed in certain moments? Absolutely, they have. And can they play better? Yes. But I think from where we started to where they are right now, this has been a really positive season for this team.
Talking all things Hawks with our buddy Caleb Johnson, covers them for us right here at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas Turtle with you until 5 o'clock. Okay, as we stand here right now, what do you think the likelihood either or both Niang and LeVert return next season?
Yeah, I've actually been going back and forth with this with some friends who cover the team, just because we've been trying to figure out, you know, what this roster is going to look like. I think the truthful answer is not going to be the one that Hawks fans necessarily want to hear, because it's going to come down to money, and no one ever likes when it comes down to money, because I think the Hawks are still in a position where they're not going to go into the luxury tax. And so can they get Karras on a team-friendly deal, or has he played too well that he's going to require more money than what they're going to want to invest? I think Niang is going to be the one who returns, just because he is on more of a team-friendly deal. But certainly he could be a trade piece for this team in the offseason. I think it's really like, what do you want to do with Kobe Bufkin? Because he's someone that, if you want my personal opinion, I'm ready to move on from, because I'm kind of tired of the injury bug that's hit him, and it's been unfortunate, you know, potentially outside of his control. However, it's tough to go into year three of your career when the Hawks are going to have to decide by October of this year whether they want to pick up his fourth year, and having to make that decision before they've even really got to see half a season of him healthy, much less a full season, leads me to be on the side of, like, yeah, trade him and find what you can get for him, because I'm much more I know what I'm going to get from Karis LeVert. And honestly, I just think he's been an incredible vet, Chris. Like, the way he has positively impacted that locker room. And honestly, George too. Like, those two guys have been such great vets for Trae Young and just the team overall, that you don't often get those guys in the NBA anymore because of contracts and how they all work. Vets are getting kicked out of the league because it's easier to pay the cheaper, you know, cheaper, younger guys. So I would love to see them both back, but I think George is the more likely one to return, just because it would not surprise me at all if Karras ends up finding himself out of being able to come back.
All right, Caleb, appreciate the time. As always, sounds like you owe your wife a nice dinner tonight, so enjoy that.
Absolutely, man. You have a good one.
All right.